Welcome to the Masterlink podcast, getting to know creatives in the music industry. Available on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you like our podcast, you can support us on patreon.com/themasterlinksessions. You can watch all of our previous music videos by visiting masterlinksessions.com, or you could simply buy us a coffee from buymeacoffee.com/masterlink. Hi everyone, welcome to the Masterlink podcast. My name's James.
I'm Rob, and today we're talking to husband and wife, rock, Americana, blues duo, When Rivers Meet. Hi guys.
Good
to see you.
I love that you're in the car. It's so cool. It's very rock and roll to me. I don't know why that is. But so you've been in the studio today, Tuesday the 7th of Feb.
Yeah, man. We've been in here for the last, since January.
Not in the car, in the studio.
We're in it for like 2 or 3 months at the moment. And so it's just really cool.
Sorry, Grace, go on.
Yeah, we've got, we park up in our camper outside and we stay in the camper a lot of the time and then shooting back and forth from home. So, yeah.
Oh, brilliant. And can I ask? Or is it a big secret? What's happening in the studio?
A new album. New album for this year.
So we're recording an album, our third album, which is going to come out in like around August time. Yeah. We've not fixed the date. So yes, pretty exciting.
Oh, wicked. And I've just spent the last sort of half an hour listening to your 2021 album, which the title, sorry, it's just escaped me.
Saving Grace.
Saving Grace. I mean, it's got a huge sound to it. So I'm really fascinated, being a producer and engineer myself, what's going to be different, or are you going to keep it the same? How are you sort of using the studio space to create something sonically interesting or new for you guys?
We record everything in one space, so it's one live room. A lot of the recordings are pretty much all taken off of what the first live take is, drums and guitar, and then we layer up from there. And that's always been quite important to us, to keep the energy in the music,
because
there's no isolation here at all. And like on our first album in particular, you can hear the birds singing outside. So what's probably going to be different with this album is the guitar tones are changing quite a lot.
Yeah.
Because we've always been sort of weirdly anti-fuzz on our previous records. And now we can't get enough of more of like a fuzz, a pog octave, kind of playing around with that stuff.
Big muff.
Yeah. Not having...
Sorry.
Rob, come on.
No, yeah, you got to love a big muff.
For the non-guitar nerds out there, Maybe Aaron, you can describe what a big muff is.
Well, it kind of goes that sort of sound.
Yeah. So it's a guitar pedal. It's a guitar pedal.
I'm not the most technical person.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's basically fuzz.
Yeah,
lots of fuzz.
Fuzzy sound.
Yeah. And I guess before we were very much like classic rock. All the way, sort of Marshall Gibson sounds. Yeah. And this time we're like, it's a lot more octave stuff, a lot more fuzz. We've got two amps on everything now. So we've got like fuzz one side and then the distorted tones the other side. Mm. And it's always been quite a cool thing. Our producer, Adam, is really into exploring the space.
The last song. Yeah.
Grow Man Comet on Saving Grace album. Yeah. We actually recorded it up. The drums were recorded up in the treehouse, which is over there.
30 foot up.
Nice.
Platform. So the microphones were spread all out in this field, like in the greenhouse and stuff. So we're doing that on this album as well. We're putting, Adam takes, I can't remember what he calls it, but he records the sound frequencies from different places he goes to. So we're literally putting the drums in different size spaces. And so some of the sound massive, even though they're all recorded in the same space. It's just, we don't like to use as too many like effects and stuff. Well, we use a lot of guitar pedals, but there's not like a lot of plugins on online on the screen. That sounds really like archaic, doesn't it?
No,
like,
it's my... great. Sorry, go on.
keeping it organic.
Totally, yeah. And it's kind of like the old school way of recording, say, like in the late 60s, 70s.
It's all like
page delay
reuse. Yeah.
All classic stuff, yeah.
I mean, it's cool. I mean, the last album kind of reminded me of kind of like that kind of Zeppelin vibe.
Yeah.
You know, with that kind of Bonamy drums and that kind of like riffy thing going on all the way through. So I'm looking forward to hearing that with the Big Muff. Oh God, I do have a question for you though. I mean, I obviously I've met you before and done various photo sessions with you, and I'd like to know, for the people kind of listening at home and maybe watching on the VOD, I mean, how does a couple, I mean, you got together in a pub, is this right? And
yeah.
So what was that journey from kind of meeting in a pub in Essex, and then being asked to kind of like support people like Joe Bonamassa and go on the cruise and all that sort of stuff? And how did this happen?
Well, slowly.
Yeah, very slowly, yeah. And years of just doing music, wasn't it? And so like finding our feet, finding our sound. I mean, we didn't find our sound really until probably 2019 when we first did our first EP, The Uprising. But before that, we was kind of acoustic Americana type of folky type of stuff, finger pick guitar, and it was like we enjoyed doing it, don't get me wrong, but it was kind of like it just didn't feel like us, because we were going to rock concerts and stuff, and yet we were playing that sort of music. So we went to see Guns N' Roses, and supporting Guns N' Roses was Tyler Bryant and the Shakedown, and it was like you literally stood up, didn't you, when he was playing, like, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
A long time to, I mean, like a lot of other people, we done all cover stuff, you know, at the weekends, like function stuff.
Yeah.
But with our own music, it definitely took us a really long time to find something that we liked.
Yeah.
And for years we were doing the thing of like working really hard on stuff at home, expecting that reaction when you go out of like, oh wow, you know this is great, and we weren't getting it, and it was frustrating for years, and until we did consciously change and say, right, this is what we're going to write, something like this is going to be like riffy and gritty and heavy and something that we want to listen to. And as soon as we'd done that, there is a moment we went out and played a first blues festival, and people were walking past and they were like, oh, and it was the first time we were like,
oh, dear, people
seeing us.
It was kind of, it was cool, wasn't it? Because I think it is the thing where you are what you portray to a certain extent. And when we were playing the acoustic stuff, even though we liked what we did, we didn't really love it, you know. And
it's weird how intuitive people must be, like, of because all of a sudden it was like authentic to us, and people were liking
when
it,
they
were seeing us all of a sudden. It just took a long time. And then, like, to be now, like you say, like playing on the blues cruise and stuff, I think we've just lost the plot with it. I don't even,
so surreal.
It's just, brilliant.
I mean, you know, he's going to get up and guest with you, don't you?
Apparently so, yeah.
He does that with everybody. But I mean, this is going to be mental. It's going to be great. Yeah. I mean, I think you're one of the first bands I've ever worked with who've kind of seemingly really harnessed the power of social media you've gone from, I mean, when I first met you, your numbers were really good and you were connecting with people, but something's happened in the last kind of like 2 or 3 years. I mean, I don't know whether it's your regular streams that you do, or just your engagement is insane with your fans. I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Grace, you do a lot of that, and kind of like the mastermind maybe behind some of that. But how do you see that? How do you connect? I mean, how have you done this? Just for other bands might be watching, you know.
I think. To start with, it was like a change of attitude towards it, because before it was like just a hassle. Like, this is, you know, this isn't part of what, this is like an annoying extra thing you have to do because this is what everyone has to do to, you know, to exist in music. And then as soon as, because of lockdown, we changed our attitude towards it. And we were like, well, let's now reframe it. And we're online musicians, and let's see this as a positive tool. We can continue to play our music and get it out there. And I think it was like, as soon as we didn't see it as the enemy.
Yeah.
And we were like, this is actually a way we can connect with people. And even when you are playing on the road, like, not everyone lives in a 2-hour radius of your next gig and can come to your gig, you know? So I think seeing it as just connecting with people and getting your music heard, which is all we all want in what we're doing. Yeah. And then, of course, being savvy with it and utilizing it, like, with the streams, and seeing it as connecting and not just like, can you like this? Can you follow this? Do this? Like, it's got to be like, you've got to offer your music and offer something. That's how we all work, isn't it? You can't just like say to random people, can you do this for me? It's like, we have to offer our music and then people will support you in return. It's like a mutual thing.
Yeah,
that's how I see it.
How long, because that's you say it so succinctly and so beautifully in the way, oh, we just did this. I wonder how that must have taken a few days, weeks, months to sort of practice and put all those new tasks sort of into your daily routine or whatever you do to sort of make that work. And it's quite a mind shift, because I know I definitely see social media as a faff. So I wonder, what was it like actually, you know, turning your perspective around? I wonder if you still see it. Sometimes you're like, oh, I'm doing this, but then you go, oh no, actually, this is really now important.
Mm.
I think, I started doing a lot of online courses and stuff with marketing, and that definitely, like, to start to see it as, you have your creative part, you know, what we're doing now in the studio, we're thinking about, pretty much all the time we're in the studio, we're thinking about when we do it live, to be honest. But, I kind of like it. It's two parts to it. It's like, this is the music, and to enable then our career in music and for us to not be working the day jobs, you know, that we were, you have to do that part of it and don't see it as
the enemy.
Yeah.
And
see it as a positive and not a negative. It's all part of the music industry now. Everything online is so in parallel with everything that's in the music industry.
Promoters say, like, if you're not online, you don't exist.
Yeah.
And it's brutal.
Yeah.
And it's so easy as well to get wrapped up in the numbers of everything.
Mm.
And I think that was, and even, I'm going off again, but like, even then, because you're putting yourself out, and we totally boost our posts and try and reach new audiences with advertising. You then have to be open to, like, people are not going to like it, and people are going to want to tell you they don't like it. And you have to be able to, like, suck that up as well, which is a whole nother level of, like,
which is kind of cool. But like, there's plenty of people out there that won't like what you do, but there's plenty of people out there that will like what you do, you know. And when we record our music, when we write our music, shall we say, we always think, you know, do we love it? What we're writing. If we don't love it, we scrap it. But if we do love it, then we carry on. And because we love it, we show that we love it.
Also,
there's going to be other people that love it too. You know,
I totally get that. That's so interesting. I did. I had a just as a quick aside. I did a course with Tom Lord Alge, who's Chris's brother, mix engineer, and one of the most amazing sort of pieces of advice he was sort of giving to the room, which is exactly what you just said. It's like, if you don't love your mix, how on earth are you going to expect the artist to love it?
Yeah.
And it's such a simple thing, but I hadn't really thought of it like that before. And it was just really interesting.
Totally. And I think as well, if you start, which is what we were sort of doing originally, was, what are other people going to like this? Is Sanso going to like this? Who's going to be listening next week? As soon as you start doing that, you lose your, like, you lose your grounding, because what are you basing it on? Like, you're not actually emotionally loving what you're doing. What's the point? It almost becomes like you have to always, like, we totally always question ourselves. Like, we're working on a new song today and we bring it in and we're really loving it, we're vibing it at home. You bring it in as soon as, you know, we're showing it to our producer, we're thinking, is that good? Is that and so you have to have that. If we started to just worry about what he's thinking, when we don't even know, we're just making it up in our own heads, we could scrap it when at home we were totally vibing it. So if you have to keep coming back to no, do I like it? Yes or no, you know, otherwise you just lost completely.
I think one of the things that turned our heads as well was when we were writing the stuff originally, writing stuff before the stuff we do now, you know, there was we watched a program with David Bowie and I think it was back in the 70s, I think it was. And he was writing his own music and he was loving it and he was really successful, doing fantastic stuff. Then he started writing for other people because he was being told what to write, apparently. And then he wasn't loving it. And then all of a sudden his career went down.
Yeah.
He then went away, reinvented himself, and started writing what he loved writing, and then all of a sudden his career went back up again. And I think it's the authenticity,
like,
people know,
you know.
Just authenticity.
Well, and that's it, isn't it? That's the buzzword. I think people are smart enough to smell a rat, you know, when it's not authentic. And I think it comes across very, very clearly in your music that it's very authentic, just from the sound of it, Grace, the way you're singing. Just the sound of it, there's a sort of grounding in there, I think. It comes across.
Cool. That's cool.
Brilliant. It's true. And I think that's the same with the live streams. It's kind of like you really lay yourself bare, and it's like you know, it's not like, I mean, you're sitting here in your car talking to us now, and it's not like you've gone and got changed, got prepped. You know, there's no stage, there's no act. I mean, I know you. And you know, what you see is what you get. And you know, I'm hoping that the next few songs will be like greater than the sum of the parts, and it will really kind of be a real breakthrough for you guys.
Oh, cheers, man!
Which I'm sure it will. And I'm looking forward to doing some more photos. But
we've got our dates booked in, haven't we, Rob?
Yeah. I've been talking to Sarah. She's got it all covered, mate.
Oh, good. I thought you were like fishing then.
No.
It's all booked in. Oh, okay, that's good.
Well, do you know what always makes me laugh? I was telling Sarah this the other day. When we done our last shoot, I had, because you done the cover of Saving Grace, didn't you? That's your picture.
Yeah.
And I had that dress on, but I was only half got changed. So on the bottom, I had like baggy jeans and a big pair of chunky boots on, and I would half got changed. And I remember you coming over and saying, "So, what sort of look are we going?" And I worried that I was going to do this weird outfit, and I was like, oh, you know, just like
just wearing jeans.
And then after like a few minutes I was like, oh no, I'm not wearing this. But yeah, and you're like, oh, but you were so diplomatic, right?
I'm just socially awkward, you know that. Yeah, like, what the heck are you wearing? I can't say that. Wow. So how many tracks have you got down? And how many more to go, do you think?
Well, we're working on number 8 today.
Wow.
Great.
We've only got 2 or 3 weeks left, so we're probably thinking another 2.
Okay.
Maybe 3 squeeze in, but it just depends, because we're quite time conscious this time around. So.
And are you and is it the same people playing on this on this record? Because obviously you've got a touring band now.
We always think that, you know, if it ain't fixed, if it ain't broken, don't fix
it. If it ain't broke,
don't break it.
Nice.
No. So it's just myself on guitars, Grace is playing mandolin, fiddle, and then Adam's playing the bass and drums. So, and Keith. Yeah,
and we're lucky because, like, as well, in lockdown, we were able to record because there's always just the three of us. We sort of locked down together.
Wow.
And it also, even though it makes things a lot longer, because Adam's engineering, producing and playing.
Yeah.
So it's a lot, but it means that he's so good at, like, like getting inside our heads and what we're after. Like, we don't even have to say much to him now because we're all on the same page. He doesn't have to explain how he wants anyone to play anything, or we're very much in tune. And then, like you say, we've got the touring band as well, and Adam's actually going to be coming on tour for a few dates as well this year.
Amazing.
So yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. What's so on tour? So sorry. So you got you. So it's you two. So you got drums and bass.
Yeah.
And then Adam. So will then Adam be filling in as well? So there'll be five of you on stage.
No. It'll be still be four. Adam's going to be. And we got Foxy on drums.
Great. Brilliant. And then so the guitar sound on the album is huge, Aaron. So how do you go about recreating that live?
Well, it's a mixture of pedals and hitting the strings really, really hard.
Amazing.
Yeah, we have certain sounds that we recreate with the amps and the pedals, and
we're now always traveling with our own sound engineer as well, which is such
a big part
of it. And
he knows our sound, so
and he's awesome as well. Yeah. Like, he so knows his stuff. And this time you're going to take two amps with a delay in between so that we get a real full sound.
Yeah. So we have a cleaner sound and then we have a fuzz sound as well. So it's going to really come into the mix and make the guitars even stand out even further. So it'd be really cool.
That's really cool. I went on tour as a sound engineer, and it's so nice being able to really get involved with the band, because A, you know what on earth's going on, and I think, I don't know, do you feel like your sound engineer sort of becomes part of the band?
Yes.
Fifth member
of the band.
Sure. So cool. Yeah, it's such a big, I think that's such a big thing. It's so difficult when bands, I mean, I've done just the sound guy, being in the venue. And I know it's so difficult, especially if you've got like stereo amps. Some guy's like, "What? Why have you brought stereo amps?" But no, that's super cool. I think it's for other bands, get a sound engineer, essentially. Okay. It's super cool.
They've already got one, James.
No, other.
No, it's amazing. Well, it seems like one of the keys to your success is actually kind of like you started as a duo and you're kind of adding members to your team. You've got and who you trust, and you're kind of creating this incredible kind of ring of trust and expanding when rivers meet in that way. So, I mean, I think that's a good way of doing stuff.
Well, like you say, I mean, Sarah's our manager, and Sarah's actually Grace's sister.
Yeah.
So,
we've got Stewie, who's Aaron's best mate since he was like five.
Oh, wow.
And he runs our merch side of things. It's just been like kind of with everything, like a cottage industry kind of thing, where to start with we're sending all the CDs out ourselves, and then gradually now, you know, I've got my friend who's helping us send out some other CDs. We've got our pack in place so we can chart report. It's like
great.
We're just doing it, as even though it's kind of gone. We've expanded so much on, like, from when we were here last time we were doing an album.
Yeah.
Like you say, it's kind of like we're really careful about who comes in, because, like, especially with our merch, for example, if someone's T-shirt is dodgy and it's got a hole in it, it's really important that we reply to their email and they get a new one, because they're supporting our music. And so, like, everyone who's involved in what we do, they've got to be on board.
Got
with
be passionate
your,
about WRM.
If your CD's not turned up, then you don't want someone to be like, "Well, I ordered it and I have not had it for 3 weeks. They don't give one about me." You know, why are they going to bother supporting us if we don't? Like, again, it's like the mutual thing, isn't it?
Well, I think it's amazing you've done all this without a record company, and it's just been all off your own back and just work, and you've laid yourself bare. You're super honest, and now you're kind of, it's almost like you're expanding the family business to bring kind of more members in. I think it's incredible. I mean if I were you, I would be filming this for some sort of kind of documentary or something, because it's like, I was watching Bangers and Cash the other day. Have you seen that?
No.
It's like this family business where they're, it's completely different. It's nothing to do with music. And they buy and sell old cars, like classics. Like they find an old Mini in a garage. And it's like, but actually, it needn't be about cars or anything. It's just this beautiful kind of family unit, all work together. Mm. And they're respected where they live in North Yorkshire. And it's become a passion that's become like a really multi-million pound business. Mm. And I think it's amazing that you've gone from this couple in a pub in Essex to this, you know, all this fully fledged organization, you know, when you're talking, you know, and it's, you're giving people the same amount of kind of value for money customer service. It, you know, if they've been to one gig and bought one t-shirt, I think it's amazing, you know. Yeah. I mean, I think that's testament to how, I mean, I've only known you for 2.5, 3 years, maybe.
3 years, yeah.
But it seems like you've gone from, you know, small places, you know, small festivals to the big rooms, you know, so who knows where you'll be in 2 years, you know, or 1 year even. It's like,
cross fingers.
Hopefully Jules Holland will watch this.
This brings up an interesting point. So I wonder, so you're growing this incredible family, this business. Is there then a want? How big do you want it to go? And I suppose I'm including in that, because it sounds like you've got such an amazing family. Would you then, if a record label, so like Warner or whoever it might be, would come along? Because then you're in a difficult place, because you've got your family, but then you've got this incredible what could be an amazing opportunity. How do you feel about that, sort of being approached by a label and all that stuff?
Well. I think if it was like, if we were young, we're young, but we're not like young.
We're not teenagers.
We're not like just stepping out. And I think the, like, you know, the lure of a record label, you know, I've been obsessed with EMI, having a record deal with EMI since I was like 10. but we have been approached by a major label now, and we've been offered a record deal. Yeah. And we were like, nah. Straight away, it was like
to be fair, we did actually hear what was offered, kind of thing.
Oh yeah, and we wanted to know what was on offer.
It was good,
but when you then weigh it up, of like, when we want to make our own decisions, we want to stay in Suffolk. I'd love to like do you a little thing of where we are, because it's seriously beautiful down here. But our producer, like, we're just in his house doing stuff in Suffolk. We tour when we want to tour. My sister, she's doing all our merch as well on tour, which is awesome. Just to lose all that, it's just loses the fun.
Yeah, it's losing the control of what you're doing, isn't it? And when you want to make decisions and doing the decisions for at the right time for yourselves, if you know what I mean. And you know, not being told what to do, I suppose.
There's not, it's not a golden ticket necessarily either. Mm. Like, you'd say, oh yeah, I mean, one of the big factors of it was, so who'll deal with all our merch? And so we looked up this company that they're going to put it with. You see all the reviews, they've never come back to me, I've still never had my vinyl. I mean, like, these are people that, like, that would give me sleepless nights, seriously. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, I just couldn't bear it. It's not tempting.
We're so hands-on with everything.
Yeah.
And to have that control taken away would be frightening, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean...
No.
No, what I mean...
Well, but it's interesting, like, no wonder the labels want you. I mean, for obvious reasons, right? But, and then it's so interesting that you've then said no. It's so fascinating. I love it's so interesting the way it's all going, that you guys are just
this is great but I just knew you would say no anyway.
Yeah.
I mean you're better off anyway, because you'll own all your masters. You know, and really, I mean, do you want just a big bank loan from a label? I mean, which is
that's exactly right.
I mean, I can see with this, I can see you kind of like growing, but also with the skills that you've both kind of you picked up along the way, you could be consultants to other bands. And you probably, it wouldn't surprise me if you get lots of people asking you how you're doing this and what we should do next, that sort of thing, you know, other bands.
I'm looking that, that
And that's really cool because you know, it was only, it's literally like the last 3 years that it's turned around for us, and it's so weird how like we see things from such a different angle to what we did before.
Yeah.
And you can't even imagine how, I can't even get my head back into my mindset 3 years ago, because like everything, all our angles have just changed so much. And yeah, that would be, that's, it's just really cool that we're in this position to be having this conversation. And and also like we go to work, like this is the best.
No, that's really beautiful. I was going to ask you just a quick question as well, because I could see you in an ideal world, okay, because I know you like rock music, and you've said, you know, that Tyler Bryant gig was kind of a bit of a watershed moment for you. But I mean, is there a band working in the world at the moment that you would love to support?
Easy.
Yeah.
Rival Sons.
I'll phone Jay and sort it out. That's absolutely fine. I think that's a great match.
We love because they're
we love their art.
They're like arty rock. Like they've got like, they put their own flavor on things, and they're not like
no
classic
boundaries.
Rock and then obviously Jay's got an epic voice. Aaron's got a bit of like
obsessed with Scott Holiday. Yeah,
I can see there's a little bit of that styling going on actually with the moustache there. I think. Oh my goodness! I was talking to his guitar tech last time he was in the UK, and the set list, I think it was like, I don't know, 13 songs or something, but the guitar tech, he had 13 guitars, all tuned to different tunings, all with different capos, and he said
counted.
I was there, man.
Oh yeah, of course you were.
I saw his pedal board. He's got 3 pedal boards on it. I was like, oh man, it's like the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah. It's a beautiful sound. It makes a really beautiful sound. But that's probably my favourite band, apart from you. I don't know. James.
Hello.
Is it time for the shameless plug part of the podcast?
I have a question.
James has a question.
No, I have a question. We mentioned the mandolin and the violin earlier on. Yeah. How do you crowbar that in? Tell me. How does that work? How's that part of the sound, and what do you do to it to sort of make it into whatever it is?
Well, do you know, I don't really know how it felt. Well, I do know actually how it started out. I just remembered. So I used to have an acoustic mandolin, and I never really liked the sound of it much, to be quite honest with you. But it makes sense to me musically, like the whole fifths thing, like, makes sense to me, much so more like guitars. I don't, you know, it's mandolins, they make sense, violins, they make sense to me. It wasn't until I got a resonator mandolin and the action on it was so high, I was like, I can't play this thing. And I picked up a slide and that sounds cool. And all of a sudden it was like, now we can make this work in what we're doing.
I think as well, because we were a duo at the time, it's like, how do we make our sound big, you know, for just two people? Got the drum, just played the drum. Grace, I'm playing rhythm, Grace is playing lead. It's like,
and
that's the sound, you
yeah
know?
And then I got then start putting a mandolin through a pedal board. I got my electric solid body mandolin, and you put it through like OCD, POG, Verb, you know, a bit of delay. Sounds epic. And also it just, especially like you're saying with the duo stuff, we've got like Aaron uses a bass drum, he's got like a kick drum, he's doing the rhythm in the middle, and then you put the mandolin stuff on top of that, and like sonically you're covering a big
That's
old
a big
sound,
wall of sound.
Especially two voices, and so it all of it, it just sort of worked, and it's now become like part of our sound, so it's quite easy to fit in now. It sort of makes sense to us.
That's so cool, because you would never think there was a mandolin sort of on that, you know, sort of in the midst of that noise of the album, you know, you wouldn't think it was sort of part of the aesthetic, but that's super cool. It's wicked. So how often does the violin come out?
Well, probably not as much as we want it to, actually, because on this album we sort of had a few things. We came in, we wanted more of Aaron's voice on it, which is highly requested. I don't say that with any bitterness at all. So we've not actually put any violin down on this album yet, so we're going to go back through, and a lot of the time it ends up being like a pedal note on recordings. But it's just kind of cool to shred a bit of violin over stuff as well, because it's people don't expect it, because like we're on, you know, we played at the Planet Rock Stop and the October and Planet Rock gigs, and like there's no violins there, and it's just cool to throw it into the mix. It's like a different sound, so it's fun, but we need to put more on this album.
Totally. But talking about voices though, I mean, I'm just honored to be able to sing with Grace, because I mean, she is amazing. I mean, UK number one blues vocalist of the year, nominated and won last year, and it was just like, it's incredible. It's just like when she sings, it's like, oh, it's so good.
You are totally biased, but that's, thank you.
Yeah, but you know, I might be a little bit biased, but at the same time, you know what you like, don't you? So
You guys,
that's great, mate. I love that.
But yeah, you're up for an award this time around as well, aren't you? Are you?
Yeah, Band of the Year. 3 years trot, we've been nominated, won it last 2 years, haven't we? So hopefully, cross fingers.
We do believe we can only win it one more time. So yeah, hopefully time. This is the time.
We're in playing.
Then you take the cup home after that. It's like the, it's like the World Cup, isn't it?
I have one more question.
Yeah.
If that's all right.
Yeah,
Mr. Rob.
Yeah, of course.
I would like to know how does your songwriting work? If you can sort of encapsulate that for us.
So we have a specific style of writing where, or actually it's just changed just slightly just now, but before we couldn't actually write together because there'd be too many arguments.
Love it. Brilliant.
So I do all the lyrics and Grace does all the music.
Yeah, and
basically, which is, a lot of people would think it would be the other way around. But Grace has so many melodies in her head, it's just like, wow. Just like, yeah.
So pretty Grace, cool. So Grace, when you see Aaron's lyrics, are you able to immediately or sort of very quickly sort of overlay your melodic ideas onto the lyrics, and then you've got chords that come with that? So Aaron, do you not do any even basic chords when you're songwriting?
We tend to say there's different ways that we do it, but say for instance I write the lyrics, I just write lyrics for the sake of it. Grace will come along and she'll have something in her head when she starts reading the lyrics, and then she'll pick up the guitar and just play a few chords and things like that, don't you? And then it's just, oh, and then you got a melody, and then we get together, then I pick up the guitar, start playing, and then she starts singing and things like that, and that's the way it progresses from there, really.
There is a song on this album, and it's a ballad, but we're really happy with it. It's really cool. We're actually hoping to have a gospel choir on it as well. It's going to be a bit epic. And that was like about a specific thing that was happening at that time. Aaron wrote the lyrics, and I did. That is one I just read, and I was like, "That's written. It's already done and dusted." And that just, you know, it happens. And then other times, you know, we sit out in our garden in the cabin, and we're listening to riffs, getting ideas, and we always tend to just go back to a lot of the old, like, original blues stuff, and you just, all these ideas come through. And then, then it's a bit more back and forth, which we weren't able to do before because we did just disagree with each other. And a lot of that is, like, insecurities as well, of, like, you're putting your ideas out there. And to a certain extent, I think that's why we've not really been that open to co-write with anybody. It's like there's a huge amount of like trust in putting your ideas out and not being shot down, and just having the trust in yourself. Because again, as soon as you start questioning it, you might as well, you can't write a thing, you know. So we do write a little bit with our producer, but that's because, you know, we've been sort of working with him for a few years, and it's okay. But we're like we're a safe zone with each other where we can throw stuff out now, and we don't shoot each other down.
I think the thing is as well, there's no egos between us. We're not in competition with each other. We want what's best for the song, and you know, like for instance, if we're writing a song, and then Grace would say to me, just for instance, you know, I think your voice would sound so much better on this than mine, or something like that, you know, or yeah, that sort of thing, isn't it? So there's no real
We've got like the same end goal.
Yeah, totally. We just want to play music together and write the best songs we can together, you know?
It sounds like you've done a lot of work mentally. Mm. It really sounds like you've put the hours in to sort of figure it out, which is really honourable, I think.
Thank you.
You know, considering what you were saying about, you know, you used to argue, so you figured that one out, and then you didn't like social media, then you figured that one out. It's really cool. It's like it must be tough to sort of work through those things, but clearly it's paid off.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think just don't give up. You know, it's a tough thing to do, and that being creative is, or can be.
And there's another guy who's doing really, really well in his music, and he was saying how like it's almost so little, not so little, but it's not all about like your natural talent. Mm. As to whether you are sick, whatever your sick, the idea of success in music is, but it's so little to do with that, and it's so much about perseverance. Mm. And it truly is. Like, I mean, there's so many talented people. You can go to any bloody blues jam and just want to slit your wrists. You know what I mean?
Good way, because they're so good.
Yeah, this is rubbish.
I'm just gonna leave it there. Because they're good.
Because they're so talented.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it.
We got that.
Yeah, they got it.
Unbelievable people. Yeah.
And it's so little to do with that, and so much more to do with how much you are going to push through and sort all these other things out, and all the, like, we know this amazing jazz guitarist. And then we were at a gig and he was playing just in our local pub. We're like, mate, you're amazing. You know, what other stuff are you doing? And I've got to do another year of this practice, mate, because I need to work on this side of my play before I can do anything else. I want to do, you know, and we're like, no, do it, mate. You're amazing, you know. And there's so much of that you just, there's so much talent out there we've never heard and we never will hear. And it's just like, there's so much about the perseverance, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it is the mental state. Yeah, there's a major battle. If you have issues with like going out and playing and things like that, the mental battles is, yeah.
Imposter syndrome. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can only be who you can be. You're only you. You can only be yourself, can't you? So.
This is true. This is very, very true. I mean, that's that imposter syndrome. I mean, it happens to everyone, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, it happens to me. I mean, I think you're lucky in a way that you kind of get on so well together. And there is two of you, you know. I mean, a lot of people are just, you know, in it, just themselves. But But anyway, I thank you for your honesty.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool.
Yeah, and I don't know how a lot of people do it on their own. Yeah. Because...
That's
like
tough.
We're saying about all the, you know, you're out, there's good sides and bad sides to social media. When you've not got someone else to talk that through with, or
doing live streams, for instance, we were so lucky because it was two of us. Mm. We just bounce off each other.
You're not just talking to a screen, you know.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
We talk to. There's so, yeah, that's a big part as well as to why it's worked, is because we've got each other as backup.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Go on, Rob. Beautiful.
Well, yeah, I think it is the time.
Now it's the time.
Please, it is time for the shameless plug. So if there's anything you want to steer people who may have not heard you, or they want to come and see you, do you want to just tell us, you know, where can people see more?
Yeah, so we are, our second headline tour starts...
End of April.
We're on the road with Reef in March, doing some starting in March.
Very
That's
cool.
Gonna, Yeah. We're doing some duos.
Say hi to Luke for me, drummer.
Will do.
Very cool. Yeah, we're really looking forward to that. And then, like I said, we've got our album coming out in August, so the pre-order's going up. And Adam's just started on the drums again in there. with it, we are going to be back doing our weekly live streams probably as soon as we're done in the studio.
Yeah, another 2 or 3 weeks.
Which we do on Facebook. But we're all social media-ing everywhere.
Yeah, so. Got loads of festivals coming up. So, yeah. And then obviously the Blues Cruise in
August.
Yeah, mid-August, yeah.
Mm. Amazing. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I have to save up and buy a ticket. Come and see you with Jobo.
Yeah, man. That'd be awesome.
And if obviously this is going to be going up this week, so I mean we might put a link to that Blues Awards thing, because that'd
be really cool.
I'm gonna write that down.
It's been brilliant catching up, and if people don't know Grace and Aaron's stuff, then please do check it out. It's absolutely awesome. That's it, I think, folks.
Thank you for coming and thank you for talking to us.
Oh, thank you for having us. It's awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
It's been good.